Okay, now when you know what's the best tempo for practicing and performing, let's take a look now at the procedure, how you can actually start practicing this piece. What are the steps required to actually master this piece from the beginning until the end, from the first note until the last note, okay? And the way we will be doing this, and I strongly recommend, is to subdivide the piece in manageable units, basically fragments. And since the music of this piece is conveniently notated in about two or three measures at a time in one line, so that is rather suitable fragment for practicing. So two or three measures at a time, that's your one fragment for practicing, okay? And so on. So I recommend practicing this chorale prelude in fragments of about two or three measures at a time. Always start at the downbeat and then end on the downbeat also of the new measure, of the beginning of the new fragment. For example, when you start practicing from the beginning, you start from the downbeat of measure one and finish this fragment on the downbeat of measure four. That's the first line. And since this first fragment has three voices, except the soprano line is missing, right? So three voices is purely polyphonic texture, very independent voices, and highly developed and independent pedal part, always moving in the at this 8 foot, eight note level. So I recommend taking your fragment even further. I recommend starting to practice in solo voices first. Okay? So if in your fragment are present all the voices, the way we will be doing is at first is you will be practicing just one soprano part at all, without alto, without tenor, without the pedals, just solo line, just the right hand part. And in the first fragment, this is missing, so you will be starting not from soprano but from the alto line, okay? And I highly recommend you play in such a slow tempo that you avoid mistakes, but you play at least three times in a row. That's very, very important. Otherwise, if you just play your piece in fragments, like in separate voices, then it's not really enough. You will be not learning. You're not automating your musical material. It has to sink in your muscle memory, into your brain also. So it takes at least three correct repetitions in a row to really learn this fragment. Okay? But we will be starting from solo lines. So the first thing I recommend is practicing it in solo parts, soprano if present, then alto, tenor, and the bass. All right, and then combinations of two voices, soprano alto, soprano tenor, soprano bass, then alto tenor, alto bass, and then tenor bass. That's the basic idea for two voice combinations. And then in the same fragment, you will be playing three voices: soprano, alto, tenor, soprano, alto, bass, soprano, tenor, bass, alto, tenor, bass. And only then you attempt to play all four parts together, soprano, alto, tenor, and bass combined. That's really, really important that you don't skip these previous steps. And if you just do them in a row, in a step-by-step manner, you will notice that it's not that particularly, you know, unachievable. Sure, it might be complicated at times to play 32nd and highly ornamented right-hand melody and highly independent pedal line. But if you just play this slow motion and short fragment, two or three measures at a time, and three correct repetitions in a row of each combination, of each voice, of each part, then it's the fastest and most efficient way to learn new musical material, especially such polyphonic and independent lines as this. You see, in other pieces, you might start with four voices and then end up with three or two, or chords sometimes, not a constant number of voices may be present. But in this piece, Bach usually writes, you know, in constant voice number of voices. Soprano, alto, tenor, and bass is always present. Sometimes, you know, just soprano is silent, waiting for his turn. But nevertheless, you can see the rests in that right-hand part. So we also know that it's there, but it's waiting for its turn. So this step-by-step fashion is highly efficient and very fast learning method. I highly recommend. And then, if you practice just one line at a time, make sure you are correct in the following few things. Okay, the notes, of course, have to be correct three times in a row. Then the rhythms have to be correct also. Then the fingering and pedaling have to be correct in each repetition. And then articulation and ornamentation has to be correct. It's really important that you don't play with legato articulation or ornaments starting not from the correct note. Every time you play it, attempt to play correctly. And if you are making a mistake, then you have to stop right there, make a conscious note of this mistake, go back at the beginning of this fragment, and start again. Okay, and if you play this in this way correctly, that's number one. That's the first correct repetition. Then all you have to do is to do it two more times in a row. Okay, so if you succeed in playing the second time, that's great. So you have to play just one more time, slowly, in the same manner, same repetition, but just the third time in a row. But in many instances, the third repetition is not correct. You might stumble along. Maybe you could make one tiny melodic mistake, maybe slip of the finger. Maybe your foot is not in the right place. So then what happens is that you have to stop and count from the beginning. Start counting from number one again. That's the most efficient practice way. For many people, I have discovered that it takes about 10 repetitions total, correct and incorrect, to be ready to play three times in a row correctly. But that's not the rule. Some people might take just five, or some people might take eight, or some people might take just three, okay? Or for some people, it might not be enough, just 10 repetitions, maybe 12 or 15. But the rule is, of course, three correct repetitions in a row. That's very, very important. All right. So you practice this way in a step-by-step manner, one line at a time. Okay? Right from the beginning until measure four, then starting from measure four until measure six, from measure six until measure eight, from measure eight until measure 11, from measure 11 until 13, and so on, about two or three measures. And when you start your practice on that day, try to do the following. Try to repeat the previously learned material beforehand. Before you practice something new, always repeat that you learned the day before and the day before before and the day even before. All the materials that you learned before, you have to repeat also three times in a row. Perhaps not in voice combinations, not in voice parts, but not in solo parts, but maybe all four parts together, but in a slow motion, three times in a row. Okay, and when you do that, when you repeat all this previously learned material, then you're ready to start your new learning fragment, learning of the new fragment for that day. Okay, because it will take, of course, longer than a few days to learn all these fragments. So it might take a week or so for you to learn each fragment separately, but always remember to start your practice by repeating the previously learned fragments. Okay, that's really, really great if you can do that. Now, when you reach the end of the last page, the last fragment, the end of the last fragment, and now you have the question, what to do next? How to take this piece to the next level? How to be ready for public performance now? Because you see, you obviously understand that if you are learning this piece fragment by fragment by fragment by fragment, then you naturally are used in stopping every two or three measures at a time. And that's great, of course, for practice purposes. For a long time, you can do that. But when it comes the time to play in public, we don't want to be stopping every two measures or three measures or four measures or six. We want to be able to play this piece from the beginning until the end very fluently, right? So the thing that you can do this, you can take this practice to the next level. Remember, we learned the piece line by line, right? System by system. Now, when you learn everything in system by system until the end, now you go back, and the next step, next level basically, not the step, but level, would be to play this piece from the beginning until the end in a really slow tempo, all four parts combined, but stopping every two lines, every two systems. Okay, so also aim for three correct repetitions of each fragment, but make sure you do not stop at the end of the first line, but stop at the beginning of the third line. Sort of you're combining two fragments now. So that's the next step. When you reach the end of the speech of this piece practicing this way, then the next level would be to practice by stopping every four systems, every four lines. We always doubling the length of the fragment. That's basically one page, right? We stopped at the beginning of the second page, then at the beginning of the third page, and at the end also. Then the next level would be to stop every two pages. Okay, so you are only stopping then at this level twice in the prelude, at the beginning of the third page, and the very final level would be to play this piece without stopping, of course, also three times in a row. So you can see now how we are how you will be progressing from mastering one line at a time, then two, four lines at a time, two pages, and the entire piece. All right, so that's the basic procedure. Now, the next question to talk about is the registration about this piece. Of course, when you're practicing, you don't have to worry about. You just practice using very soft 8-foot flute, maybe on two manuals, because this is a two-manual piece, but practice using two flutes, maybe 8-foot level. Maybe if you want more emphasis on the right-hand part, you can add 8 and 4 combined to make it really to make the right-hand solo stand out. But in general, it's a soft registration. In the bass, you can add the 8-foot flute also, but you can practice with 16-foot on if you have this. But when you will be ready for public performance and want to, you know, play for other people, then you have to think what kind of real registration, concert registration, would be the most appropriate. And I've written in the score for you that the right hand part sounds really great if you play it with a cornet. A cornet is a compound stop consisting of eight flute pipes. Excuse me, five flute pipes sounding simultaneously. That's five row cornet. And the basic traditional cornet consists of such composition: 8-foot, 4-foot, then 2 2/3, basically a fifth, and then 2-foot, and 1 3/3. That's a third. 1 3/5. Excuse me. One more time: 8-4. Then 2 2/3, 2 1 3/5. That's the basic composition of the cornet, five row cornet, five rank cornet, if you want. But sometimes you don't have this cornet in your organ. You can just pull those flutes five rows manually if present. Okay, that's the basic idea. For the left-hand part, I recommend soft-sounding, nice, characteristic, perhaps, flute. It doesn't have to be too soft, because the cornet is sort of very very piercing stop and very high-pitched stop. So, at any rate, your left-hand part, alto and tenor, has to be audible. So what you can do is to do two things now. Either you can adjust the sound of your cornet by operating the swell pedal, if present, you know, setting the swell pedal halfway or 1/3. You just have to experiment and listen how it sounds in the room to make the right hand audible, but not too prominent, not too piercing. And then the left hand part, you can do some alteration. Maybe you can add another flute of the same level, 2 8-foot flutes, for example. On some organs, even could be two flutes of different pitch level, 8 and 4, for example, if they sound really soft and nice. That could work really well. And in the pedals, I recommend sort of soft 16 and 8 stops, maybe sub bass 16 and 8-foot flute register from the bass division, from the pedal division. In some cases, you can add instead of the 16-foot subbass, you can add 16-foot principal, or instead of the of the 8-foot flute, you can add 8-foot principal, depending on the balance, but depending on the overall context. You just have to listen how your registration combination works in this room, in the particular room. All right. You might be asking now whether the cornet registration is the only option, and I can certainly say no. Of course, this is a nice combination, but you can certainly play the right-hand part by using other possibilities. For example, a soft reed, solo reed of like oboe, krumhorn, these things work really nice with or without the flute of 8-foot level of this manual. About the tremolo, maybe baroque. Yes, you can experiment with the tremolo and see if the tremolo is soft enough. Then your tremolo might really fit here too. Another possibility is to play your right hand part just using the 8-foot principle. 8-foot principle imitates perfectly well, like a string stop, like a violin. Imagine this is a violin solo piece for violin, and this sounds beautiful, especially if your principal is nice sounding and vocal, sort of gentle, not too strong. It has to be gentle. Okay. Sometimes, if you don't have a nice principal, what you can do, you can play your right hand part one octave lower, but add a 4-foot octave, for example, or 4-foot principal if present at the 4-foot level, but one octave lower. Usually this combination is sort of also very, very nice in case your 8-foot principal is too strong. Okay, that's the main idea for registering this piece. Now let's talk about one additional step you can make when you practice this piece, and you basically, if you spend sufficient amount of time with this chorale prelude, you will be falling in love with this. I'm sure, I can guarantee it. If you just spend 1 week or 2 weeks with this chorale prelude, you will be falling in love with this piece very, very quickly. And that's because of course, of this charming ornamented melody, of the colorful harmonies, of spectacular pedal line, of everything put together. It's so charming. Basically, this atmosphere that creates this chorale prelude is especially suited for the liturgical time of the Advent. That's the basic purpose for this piece, for this chorale tune. It fits for the Advent, this tune. So you will basically love this piece for a long time. And if you want to know the piece even on the deeper level, okay, on the more intimate level, here is what I recommend also. In addition to all the previous steps, I highly recommend to memorize it. Memorization is not required for public performance, of course. But if you choose to memorize this piece, then you will have this advantage of knowing your chorale prelude inside out, from inside out. You will know every measure, any note, any fragment by heart. That's very powerful. And the listeners who will be listening to your performance will notice that, of course. And that's a very, very profound way to make an impression and to play from memory. You can travel, for example, from one organ to another, and you maybe will not have your music with you, your scores. But if you want to play on that organ and know this piece by heart, you can be very confident in your abilities and play just this piece from memory. And that usually is a great impression on your listeners, whoever will that might be in this particular instance. So at any rate, memorization is highly, highly recommended here, regardless whether you choose to play from memory or not. And here is how I recommend you do this, how you memorize this piece. One of the most systematic and methodical ways to approach memorization is proposed or was proposed by the great French organ master Marcel Dupré from the 20th century. He lived in the middle of the 20th century, and he wrote that one of the most powerful ways is to memorize measure by measure. For example, subdivide your piece into fragments of 4 measures long and work just on memorizing one measure at a time in this fragment. For example, let's take from the beginning. Measure 1, you memorize this measure 1, then measure 2, measure 3, and measure 4, or everything separately. You know, one measure at a time. All voices combined right away. Remember, it's not, we're not learning the piece from the beginning. At this stage, you already know the piece, but you just want to take it one step further and you're memorizing. So I recommend playing all the voices combined, but just one measure at a time. And 5 times while looking at the score, and 5 times without looking at the score. In this fragment, one measure might seem quite a long fragment because there are a lot of notes. But if you just play very slowly for 5 times in a row while looking, you somehow will easily remember these pitches, and repetition 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 will be not too difficult to do without the music, okay? And do the same for measure 2, measure 3, and measure 4. Always starting and ending on the downbeat of the measure, okay? So the first measure you start on the downbeat and end on the downbeat of measure 2. Not on the last note of measure 1, but on the downbeat of measure 2. I'll tell you why it's so important. Because the next step will be to combine the two measures. Measure 1 and 2. Alright? And if you play the first measure until measure 2, and the second measure until measure 3, downbeat of measure 3, then you know this connection. You know how to connect these two measures. That's very important. But if you played measure 1 alone without stopping at the downbeat of the next measure, and the same for the second measure, then it would be very, very difficult in some fragments for you to connect them together. Alright, so always start and end on the downbeat of the measure, your fragment. Okay, so we learned to memorize one measure at a time, then 2 measures at a time. So measure 1, 2, then 2, 3, and 3, 4. Always practicing 5 times while looking at the score and 5 times without looking. Then let's do something different. Let's do 3 times in a row. 1, 2, 3, and 2, 3, 4. Yes? So that's another step. And then the last final step for that fragment would be 1, 2, 3, 4. All 4 measures combined, starting from the beginning on the downbeat and ending on the downbeat of measure 5. And you will be already a master of this little fragment. And the next day when you start your practice, you can, you know, repeat this fragment and learn another set of 4 measures in the same manner. And do this for all fragments of four measures in this piece. And when you reach the end of this chorale prelude, You can do the same as we did it with practice. You can make your fragments twice as long. You can practice without the notes from memory 8 measures at a time, okay? And then 16 measures at a time. Then 32 measures at a time, and so on. 32 would be like the entire piece. The entire piece, because the entire piece is 34 measures at a time, so it's basically 34 measures long, the entire chorale prelude is. So your fragment could be just about the length of this piece. So that's how you take this piece into the really high level of the performance, of really real fluency, of really deep knowledge of the piece, and you memorize it. Okay, so you know everything what to do now. We have discussed analysis of this piece, how this piece is put together. We have discussed the fingering, the pedaling, articulation, ornamentation, right? Everything, the tempo, the practicing, memorization, and even registration. I've covered all the important aspects that you need to do, all these steps that you need to take in order to be ready for the public performance. Before I let you go to practice this piece, I have one final thing to say about your practice for this piece. When you attempt to play 3 times in a row correctly and watch out for incorrect notes and rhythms and ornaments, articulation, there is one thing that you need to be aware of. That's the correct hand and feet position. Okay? In the Baroque music, we try to play with the toes, remember, with your feet. So the way we depress the pedals is very, very important. We try to play with the inside of our foot. Inside, that's the big toe portion of the foot. If you do that, your knees will be pointing naturally inward, right? And some people do the opposite. They play with the outside of the foot, and then the knees will be pointing outward. Just try yourself while sitting on the bench. And if you play with the big toe portion, then the knees are pointing inward. That's very, very good, because your pedal playing will be very precise, secure, and I might say even automatic if you apply one more thing: pedal preparation. Okay, since this pedal line is so independent and continuously moving, right, highly polyphonic, you can do the following trick. You can train your feet to remember the next note. You can train your feet to be prepared for the next note. So basically the pedal preparation technique is done in the following manner. For example, let's take the right foot. You depress one pedal with the right foot, and then if you want to move to the next pedal, you just slide to the next position for the next pedal and let it wait there. But at the same instant as you release the previous note, you move, you slide your foot to the next position. And that's called pedal preparation. You're preparing your feet for the next note, all right? And let them rest there. And when the time comes to push the pedal, to depress the pedal, your feet will be in position, okay? So that's one thing to remember. And one of the last things to remember is, of course, how to keep your feet. In alternate toe technique, we don't use the feet crossing, not like right over left or left over right. For example, in the first measure in of the pedal line, if you look G, A, B flat, C, and D, these five pitches, left, right, left, right, left, are played in this in the following manner. You have to keep your knees together, basically, if possible. If not, maybe just the heels. The knees will be pointing inward, of course, and just the heels together. And when you will be playing G, your A will be in place, right? Prepared, preparation. Then, as you release note A, you move both feet to the next position for B flat and C. So you are moving both feet in pairs, G A and B flat C, right left. You move for the next position both feet together as one unit, B flat C, all right, and then D E flat, all right. No feet crossing involved here. That's very very important, and try to avoid as much. And try to use as little force as possible. Try to be really gentle with the pedals. Just barely depress the pedals with as much force as is required for depressing the note, the pedals. Not too loud. Don't pound your pedals. Don't make that high noise. Okay. Be very gentle. And the same is with fingers. Try to keep your fingers in contact with the manuals, with the keyboards, and try to be really, really gentle. I like to teach that you should play mezzo piano, sort of really, really soft, just using enough energy to depress the keys. That's all, not too much, and be really, really sort of relaxed. Relax your shoulders, relax your body, upper and lower body. Also sit up straight, but breathe deeply through your nose. And this high deep breathing will help you relax. But not only that, deep breathing will help you to focus your mind and avoid making mistakes also. Because this deep breathing is a very powerful focusing technique, mental focusing technique. You can apply this when you're practicing and when you're performing also. Be present in this current measure, and the deep breathing will help you to achieve that. Okay, so now you know everything that you need to know in order to practice this piece. Play this piece, learn this piece, and be ready for public recital or public performance in church or just for fun for your friends and family. I hope you will enjoy your practice and playing, and thanks for listening, and I'll see you again very soon. Bye-bye.